I always like it when bands go out there and with a political message, because I think it's important to be a part of it, also with the music.
Music is, in the end, is something that suddenly in our lives help us to get in touch with this little ball inside, with whichever color it is. I think if we could, we would. Whatever we're doing is exactly what we should be doing. So if you are uncomfortable and you think that you should be somebody else, then you will be someone else.
I think wasting time is a great thing to do as well. And being in the moment and daring steps that you haven't done before, that is exactly what we're talking about in that context. So that is the perfect training, yeah. Because you risk something and you might just, if you have a great moment, then it might just work out beautifully and you might enter spaces that you haven't before. And, you know, if it doesn't, it can fail. So, yeah.
Some certain awakening is coming also through technological age, which I guess is the advantage of having access to much more information and being much more connected to people that we would have never otherwise been connected.
So I think, yeah, music is a very positive contribution to society facing all these issues in general.
This is Into Our Wild. In my studio van and with my tuba, I travel around Europe to meet musicians and create new pieces of music and have conversations about music, society and life. In Vienna, my goal was to bring together two musicians who otherwise wouldn't have worked together. There, it was quite hard to find two musicians who were open to risk the concept of getting to know each other in the process of recording a song together without knowing the outcome before. At one evening, I went to the late-night Liederabend, where classical music is performed together with singer-songwriter and improvised music in the upper floor of a bar. There, I met Sabine. She's a classical piano player, and in this evening, she played the opening song, which is a tradition for the Liederabend. It's the Trinklied, a drinking song. When I asked her to be part of Into Our Wild, she was very open to the idea and said yes in the first moment. Later she had to think about it once more, but finally she was in and very committed to make the project happen with all her many connections and ideas. Sabine is a classical concert pianist. She was born into a family of musicians in Baku, in Azerbaijan, but she grew up in Turkey. She studied in Istanbul and in Vienna, where she's living now. But she doesn't only play music, but also is a producer of films and music videos and an illustrator and also an entrepreneur for a music app. Andy is a jazz guitar player. He's natively from Tyrol and now also living in Vienna. Andy is a jazz guitar player. He's natively from Tyrol. What's special about his way of living music is that he's always searching for the conversion of traditional concepts into something other. One article describes it as jazz-centric genre hopping. The first music of him I listened to was some dark, electronic, kind of experimental hip-hop music, but also he plays quite traditional jazz. In the interview you will find out how the session was for each of us. We talked about improvisation and creative overload, about what role music played in our childhood, and about the difference of music that is just for the moment and music that lasts eternal. We learned what most of the problems of our society have to do with a little ball inside each of us. And we will listen why Sabine found that one of my questions was irrelevant to everything. Let's go to Vienna. We are now in Vienna, and yesterday we had the problem that we didn't find a room with a piano to do the session. So we decided to have whole Vienna as our room and as our instrument. Do you think the experiment worked to just open up completely and improvise everything, the whole setting, the whole room, the music, the workflow? What was your impression yesterday and today?
I think... well, we just heard a little bit of the process today, and after hearing it, I can say I think it's going really solid. into a direction that I absolutely didn't expect, because yesterday we collected lots of things and unexpectedly we didn't end up being in one place where we worked on a sound, rather than, as you said, we were walking around and collecting things. And so it was already unexpected. And then the other unexpected thing was that something so cool and solid can come out of just a pile of lots of ideas and possibilities. So I think it's absolutely going somewhere good and becoming something. What do you
think? It's also nice because when we recorded yesterday, it was little singular moments, and now hearing it together, how it works together, that's a cool moment, you know? Because yesterday it was a little piece there and we recorded a little instrument here and there, something else. And you put something together now, so that's an exciting moment to hear that for the first time, because you don't know if it actually, how it goes together. And so I think it sounds good so far, yeah.
I think it was important to have somebody like you, who's kind of like the software and we're the samples. And you just had the idea, because I think, you know, you worked on it alone. And now to be able to see which direction it really went within such a short time is pretty much like your work that really shows very well.
Cool, thank you. Did you have any expectations before starting to listen, or even while recording? Or was it just doing? And yeah, we had the click, the 128. We said it should be around a 5-4 beat, and it should be somewhere around D minor. Did you always listen to a single instrument or what you were doing, or did you have any context in your mind?
I didn't have any context in my mind whatsoever. And I thought that I would come up with something once I can play an instrument that I'm a bit more familiar with, which in this case is a piano. And the moment that I sat in front of it, I was even more lost than I was in another, you know, when I was just hitting some drumsticks on the walls of Viennese buildings. And so I would say I actually... So I was a little bit even lost in the thought that how much material there is possible to take and how off track I felt and how on track it suddenly appeared to be within a couple of hours on the next day. So I didn't have any idea, no.
Yeah, I also didn't have any expectation. The only information we had was tempo and a key.
Mm-hmm.
So anything in that frame is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what I said. I mean, just recording some different instruments with no real context. That's a thing I haven't done like this before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. Yeah,
It's an improvisation, the whole talk. And I think the session yesterday, so being around in the city, was an improvisation too. Maybe it was the highest level of music production improvisation, because nothing was set. What I tried with finding you two to take part in the session was to bring together two people who are from different musical contexts. I was surprised how much connection you had. So and then there was this kind of game of finding the people. Damn, the people you both know, and also the places you both know and you like. Where did you feel differences in your abilities to play, to create, to improvise, or didn't it play any role?
I think we are very different in how we approach the situation. I mean, first of all, it's very cool that we have things in common, because we play totally different music, but I think it's quite an exception that one from the classical field and one from the more jazz field have a lot of, you know the same people and the same mm-hmm. places and stuff like that. I think it's an exception.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you have a lot of connection points with my scene as well, right?
Yeah, of course. And also, I definitely like using Vienna in all sorts of ways possible, because it can offer you a lot of things, and it's not so big. So it's possible to feel how big it is, and then you just really point your attention to certain places, and then you just end up bumping into the same people all the time.
Mm-hmm. No, but I think the difference in how we approached the situation was, I think you give things more thought in the first step. So, and I'm just doing whatever, and you know, maybe what comes up isn't interesting or whatever. Just keep doing, and I think you give it some thought before you touch anything. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, it's not even some thought, mm-hmm. but I try to kind of, because it's not a usual practice for me to kind of create something in that given moment whilst I'm surrounded by people when it comes to, let's say, improvising sounds and music, yes? And just like a normal classical musician, that phase happens in the privacy of my own solitude and... And then whatever I create on stage is a completely different brain part or heart part or the stomach part. I think especially what I guess, you know, not to generalize, but talk about very personal moment is what I already shared with Jonas. I am personally at the moment going through some very major, basic, but very important questions and questionings in myself as a musician. So I'm kind of shifting a lot of things about myself as a musician, and also, of course, questioning lots of walls that are built between different genres of music and trying to push them. But, you know, still I'm doing baby steps. But in any case, this is why it was also interesting for me to be involved and to see my own reactions. And yes, I was maybe disappointed at some moments or more inspired than others. Looking at it somehow, I guess, trying to look at it from a new perspective that I don't even know. So I cannot even answer probably a question like that yet, because it's not an everyday situation for me, not because of this project, but also because I'm not going through an everyday moment in my life at the moment.
Where were the points you could take a new way of inspiration? Or have there been points yesterday where you thought this a new thought or a new perspective, or I want to do this again, or I really have to listen to this music, or whatever?
I think for me yesterday was more like just doing it and not, yeah, I didn't have any thought or any idea about it. I was just hearing the click. Mm-hmm. And I played what just came to mind in that moment, rhythmically. It was more like a rhythmical approach for me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because we decided to have it in 4/5.
Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty much, yeah, that was pretty much it for me yesterday. Now that there's a layout and there's actually some music there, it's a totally different story now. Mm-hmm. Because now it's really about... putting a piece of music together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not like that for me yesterday. Yesterday was just collecting fragments or pieces of a mosaic. Now it's about putting it together and adding on top of it. So mm-hmm. that's a totally different creative process now than it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I liked the time that we spent in the music instrument shop very much. And yeah. I think there was definitely some kind of underlining of already an obvious point, where one can find lots of inspiration, is that we were surrounded by lots of possibilities of creating sound. And you know, one can spend there hours and hours without realizing how much time you can spend there. And we're lucky to have a very kind owner. But I think it's also another inspiration what I got from that experience is that to know to surround myself with as many as possible sound creating devices or any kind of channels, that because it just really, really adds to one's life and possibilities. So this is where I found inspiration from, maybe not necessarily for the moment, but for my life, to see that I can just to surround myself with lots of different.
Yeah, I think that was one thing that was cool, to see how we all were aware of what was surrounding us, because we are just in that mode of looking for interesting sounds. So that's very inspiring to have that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about okay, what do I hear, even if it's like construction zone noise, maybe there's something interesting there. So that's a different mindset to go through a city, obviously. You wouldn't normally do that. Mm-hmm. So that was cool.
Yeah, maybe the inspiration for me, or it just came together from what you said, you two, because you can surround yourself with instruments, which purpose is to create sounds, which are there to be perceived as kind of music. And we mixed it. So then we went outside and we were surrounded by the everyday sounds. And I think also they can be kind of musical instruments.
Yeah.
And I had this one moment in the music shop when I thought maybe this is how Jacob Collier feels in his room. You know Jacob Collier? He's a British musician. He's quite young and kind of a musical genius. And he has one room in his in the house where he grew up with his parents and family. And there are hundreds of musical instruments and microphones and all the stuff. So this was his playground for the whole childhood and even now.
Yeah, it's also a very playful approach that he has with music in general. Yeah,
it's very playful. Yeah. So
actually, I was also living in a place with also lots of instruments, a lot of them similar to what we saw in the musical shop. Mm-hmm. And then I actually did put together a track for the game that I was creating, made out of all of these sounds that we sampled first, and then we actually would love to show it to you guys later.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, so I already like felt the great inspiration that one can have, and it's just never enough. It was a nice reminder.
Mm-hmm. Is it a difference to have the musical instruments as a source of inspiration, or to have the everyday surrounding as an inspiration? So do you have to put more effort or something to be inspired by what's around you every day?
It's just a matter of being open for it or not. So I think for me, usually in an everyday situation, I would not be open for it because I have other things in my head. But since this was the purpose of the project, to actively look for sounds or be open for interesting sounds, that just, it's just a matter of being open for it, I think. Yeah, then you can hear a lot of interesting things everywhere.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also, I mean, for me especially, even if we would look into the music and if I was conscious or putting effort or not, I see more especially in the last years, the music that I listen to and the way I listen to music and the way I play music, you know, actually not just in the recent years, it's always changing. If you, as long as you play, you always change as a musician, as a listener as well. And I think now what I look for in the sounds is different than it was before. And at the as I was saying, it always, I guess, changes. But at the moment, what I look for in sounds and in music is not something that I could get through being aware of sounds that are being produced around me. Mm-hmm. They're a bit different. But there are some phases in my life that could be inspired by some people such as Michael Jackson, even, you know, who almost beatboxed every track that he produced, or always heard sounds from environment and put them together. It's a famous example, but lots of people also do it like that. And when I'm more into that mood, then I don't need to put an effort. I actually hear lots of things and I hear the beats and I love, like, very much that, how it's just, you have the groove inside always and just gets to you. But mm-hmm. Now I'm not there at the moment. Mm-hmm. Different wave.
Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in, it's not comparing, but putting side to side how you grew up in relation to music. So how was the families you grew up? What was the role in music played in your childhood?
Okay, so for me, it was very important in my childhood. My parents are both musical people. My father played violin as a hobby. And my mom played guitar. She teaches, she was teaching little kids in school. So she always had a guitar and sing songs with them. and they both sang in a choir, and so, and music was quite important at my home, very much supported. So my sister, my older sister, she plays piano, and she was practicing since she was 6 years old, so there was always a part at home. And my brother and I started playing violin when we were six as well, and then moved on to what we play now. So he's a drummer now, mm-hmm. and I'm a guitarist. So yeah, music was very big for me at home.
Both my parents are also pianists, and I was born in Azerbaijan, so my father was actually a state artist of Azerbaijan, and he was had quite a career in Soviet Union. So I kind of grew up in a family of teachers and concert musicians. And then when we moved to Turkey, where I grew up, both my parents built pretty strong, or within the short time that they managed it, strong conservatories in these in this country where I studied. So my relationship with my family was always, of course, based around music. They were also my teachers, so there was also like private relationship of a family, then work relationship, I guess, as a student and a teacher, and then of course they were administrators in the school. So I was kind of the teacher's pet, kind of hated kid in the school.
You were at the source.
Yes, and so all of this relationship that was based around music, but also had different sides to it, such as, you know, all kinds of great advantages and disadvantages coming my way. And my sister also finished her degree as a pianist.
And wow, really? Yeah. All pianists?
Yes.
Crazy.
But then she moved to Paris to study jazz, but quit, and now she's working for the biggest classical channel, Medici TV, mm-hmm. as a production manager. So she's in charge of all the productions that are happening in Medici, and she's in touch with all classical world. So she's also in music very
and
much.
And she's not into the jazz anymore. World anymore? Or?
Not anymore.
Okay. Interesting.
That leads to the next question. So what influence of improvisation did you have? Did you improvise all your childhood? Or how playful was the approach to the instrument?
I think I started playing guitar when I was 9. And then it was obviously just about learning songs and getting the basics ready. Mm-hmm. So it was not about improvisation yet. But my brother came with a CD of a guy called Karl Ratter. He's a Austrian jazz guitarist. He used to play with Chaka Khan mm-hmm. in the States, and he was quite famous and really amazing guitarist. And I think that was my first contact with improvised music, with jazz. And then I got into it a little more and more. So then it started playing a really big role. And when I was I was taking jazz guitar lessons quite early, I think when I was 15. So, yeah. By then I was already very much interested in the improvised stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did More you? Like in a jazz context, though. Not everything completely improvised. You know, improvising over a jazz standard, for example. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you try to figure out how jazz improvisation works before you took lessons, or was it you were interested and then you took lessons to go into it?
I never thought about it. I don't know. I think probably was just interested and wanted to understand how it works, and then I took lessons.
Mm-hmm.
A really cool guy in Innsbruck who was teaching jazz guitar, and he showed me about harmony and about melody and, you know, scales and chords and all this basic stuff that you need for improvising on jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I didn't have much contact to it, very sadly, even though I always loved the music and I always listened to improvised music and always, but of course definitely always had favorites of different types of jazz as well. And it was always in my life, but I was mostly a listener. And some reason, I think it's coming more from my father's education, the way that he was educating us, and, you know, being he's finished in Moscow Conservatory, and it was all kind of made in such a way that when you play, it all has to be about what you're trying to say and what it is that, like a certain truth that the composer has found, and being a channel for it, and so on and so forth. So my main focus was more towards this, and I very much regret, and I'm paying a big price of not having had this more freedom, more free approach to the sound through improvisation, which my mom had more, but she kind of kept it to herself more, just for her enjoyment, and she let my dad be the top of the pyramid in the education, because of also his career, and he was also a little bit older than my mom, and I guess she was just being the free-spirited lady who would just, you know, play and change things in the way she liked, but she never passed it on to us. She's doing it now, but now I also already have kind of my own understanding of it and my own kind of studies of it, but I very much regret that it is not talked about more, especially in classical education. I'm trying to do everything possible to integrate that more in the ways that I do, because I teach and I also was working in a music institution. It's very easy to allow this when when kids learn music at the very base.
Yeah, for kids, that's
it's so no simple problem, just yeah. to tell them you are allowed.
Mm.
And that's all it needs. It doesn't even need like rigorous, disciplined education. I didn't have much, unfortunately, much an encounter with it.
Would you like to give it some time? So to take a year off to go into improvisation or something. So is that a wish?
Yes, absolutely. With a great, great pleasure. And especially now that I started to think of my life more like chapters rather than a long-term relationship. I'm currently building and cleaning up the part where the classical music grew. So I'm just making sure that all the weeds that were stopping me, or, you know, the fungus that kind of grew in the place where I wasn't looking, just cleaning that up. And at the same time, I wanted to develop myself more in drawing. So this is what I'm currently in this chapter. I see them more parallel to each other, so I keep them like that. But eventually, absolutely, yes, 100%. And might even not be on the just piano. I used to play the flute and the cello. And the strength of being a solo instrument, where you lead a line and you don't have to harmonize or be the foundation of the whole musical sound, is something that I also want to explore. So absolutely, yes. I look forward to it too.
I was just wondering if drawing is more like improvising for you.
The current technique that I'm learning is very close to classical education.
Okay.
Of music. It's more about developing I don't know what would be the right word in this context, but I mostly use the word truth, some sort of truth, you know. It's like, it's basically like math, where you can find every number under all circumstances, but you have to have, in order for you to reach at 4, you have to have 2 plus 2 or 1 plus 3. You cannot reach 4 if you have 5 plus 8, for example. And this is what I'm studying, what I'm seeing through drawing and from classical education. Certain truth, all truth exists, but it has things have to be in the right place for the truth to come. Reaction to things and so on. So this is what I'm at the moment studying with the selective things that I'm reading and the drawing. But there is another type of drawing that I was into, which I did for other projects, which is more close to improvising, which I would like to do more, of course, which is the street art that I was I wanted to develop myself, that's more like improvising. It's much more colorful and it's much more about the moment mm-hmm. and not the eternity. So that will probably come parallel. Maybe I'll just be doing graffitis as I'm playing some, I don't know, beatboxing mm-hmm. flute or something.
I want to pass two of the things you just said to Andy. So what do you think about truth being made up by facts? So that's how I understood it. And what do you think about that there's a difference between doing a thing for the moment or for eternity in that relation?
I'm not sure what I can say to this. Can you put the question in a different way?
Yeah, or maybe I take the bridge over how felt with it, because
it's not about doing it for eternity. It's about eternal matters and uh-huh. present matters. Basically, there's a reason why we still are interested in listening to Beethoven. Nobody's forcing you to buy a 100 euro ticket and go listen to Beethoven's symphony, right? You do this because, or some people do it because there's something to it that is eternal, that's understandable, that is beyond all the language barriers or any kind of time barrier. It still survived. And there is a reason for it, because there is something eternal to it that will always speak to some people, and it has a certain value. And then another thing that also has just as much value, but it is just simply different, is things that you create exactly in that moment, and you pretty much squeeze the lemon, because you have the lemon that was given to you, and it's gonna rot tomorrow, and it didn't exist yesterday. So you squeeze it out and you get the juice, because you simply can, and it will make your life so much more tolerable and colorful and much more pleasant, because otherwise it is very difficult to live. Even if you have the best life, you still are in agony and pain and self-doubt, and it's painful to be alive. And these lemons are important to squeeze when they're exactly ready, ripe, and you squeeze them. So this is exactly the part where I said, in my understanding, that comes through things like when you really, when you have a conversation which you didn't expect happening, or when you go out on the street and you see some colors and shapes and you put them all on the wall in colorful murals, or you improvise in an instrument or a sound in an instrument shop. Whereas there is some eternal understanding and truth this is why I gave the example, and it has actually nothing to do with the person who put this together. You know, it's not Bach or Beethoven, and lots of people also famously say that I didn't really do anything. I just heard it, or it just came to me and I produced it, so I feel bad about taking credit for it. Mm-hmm. And that's another one. This is the one that I feel like classical music is channeling through, and some writers also touched upon it, and some techniques of drawing and visual art, which is talking about eternal issues or expressing eternal issues. It's not that their purpose is that. It's just going to live through, because we also need that, because we are, in the end, also in a way eternal. We don't disappear. We happen. We have eternal and present moments. We're like a great combination of this, and they are both don't exclude each other, and just as worthy of each other. So maybe from this point of view, if one would look, for example, you can repeat your question about improvising to Andy.
And I think I want to go to another direction, because what is art, and in our case mostly music, capable of telling or changing? So yesterday we talked about what is happening to a society now, and it was kind of a joke with the microphone to go to people and to ask what do you think about the current situation. But there was the guy in the cafe who answered really seriously, and yeah. He said something like the world is going crazy, and so the reason why I do this project is to find out what we as artists can do to help society or the crazy world to stay a place to live pleasantly. So
What is the question?
let's leave it that big. So how do you see the situation? So what is the biggest problems we have to face? And if you want, you can directly combine it with the question, how can music help to change this?
I'm not an expert on what the biggest problems are of the current time, but I mean, I think it's quite obvious to everyone that it's really a crazy time. Like the guy said in the cafe, I think he was right about diagnosis. But I mean, so many people are big thinkers and philosophers who think about this question that I feel like I'm not really capable of giving this big topic appropriate answer. But I mean, obviously, there's some really big, big issues the world is facing at the moment. And one of them is the climate issue, for example. Another one is like the, you know, how rich and poor are getting further away from each other as more time passes. And so I think, I mean, the role of music can be anything. I mean, it can be very political. Like, I always like it when bands go out there and with a political message, because I think it's important, to be a part of it also with the music. I mean, not saying that it has to be, but it's cool if a band goes out there and has a political message included in the music. And but also I think music itself is just in general a very positive contribution to society, because I mean, it has positive effects on people, and it also it brings people together in the process of music making, people from different backgrounds, you know. So I think, yeah, music is a very positive contribution to society facing all these issues in general. Yeah, that's how I see it.
So is it about the stage you have as a musician and the ability to reach many people at the same time in a positive context, or is it even more?
I'm not sure. Yeah, that's one part of it, of course. Yeah, I guess the more people you can reach, the stronger the impact is you can have. Yeah, I mean, speaking about myself, I don't have a big impact on society or people because I'm not a very famous musician, you know. So, but it's only in small steps to bring out something nice for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what I think what is very special about music is that it can channel to the place where personal change is possible, because it's you can get a really honest emotional connection, and I think also there's a big responsibility, because there are people who use music to point to, from my view, wrong directions. So it's like not only the impact by how many people you reach, but also the impact by how deeply you can reach out to people. But what do you think about the situation and music?
As you said, it's also a very big question, very general question. There are some people who professionally make themselves busy with this. So I think the easiest way I can say it is that how I see it is that we are kind of, each one of us at any age, at any time in life, we have, let's say, like a little tiny, cute little ball inside that lives in between the brain and the stomach and the heart. And depending on what kind of genetic history you had, or what kind of life experience you had now, or whatever is in your past, or what it's just in the core has some kind of color to it. If depending on what kind of abilities you have in life, this color affects what you do. So let's say inside of you, this little ball is full of fear and is so afraid because this carries so much trauma. And let's say you were lucky to be born as a heir to billions of money, of some currency. And then what I find as a problem is that mostly whenever we're in such a situation, or let's say in all such cases, I see the majority of people would, instead of looking inside and seeing, oh, what is sitting in my stomach, they would go out and actually use their abilities to find the solution outside. It can be through if you have inside, let's say, some kind of really hurt, something is very hurt inside of you, and you don't have any abilities, you go out and you try to have control over other situations, such as abusing your family or your kids or your own self. It doesn't even have to be, you could be a very nice-hearted person, but you still be saying, oh, I don't feel very good sitting at home, I should go out and have a beer. And I happens over and over and over again, and then with 75 years old you're the most disappointed person with yourself and with your life, so, and you haven't done much, nor to yourself, neither to for the world. So I think this I see as the biggest problem at the moment, is that we always look for some solutions because we feel like there's no person, or let's say it's very rare, I'm sure in your experience also, that you would ask somebody, like you would hold them by the hand and you would say, like, but how are you really? What are your problems? How are you feeling? For sure they will give you a big list of whatever is wrong with them, because they will feel like they're opening up to you. So their main opening up will be probably about how difficult it is, this and that, and how much they had this in the past, and then it's affecting their future and so on. So everybody has some kind of discomfort. But to solve this, they choose mostly... Not the reflection. It's mostly looking for external in external ways, or they choose just to suffer through it rather than to solve, because solving it is, of course, you need power, you need motivation, and this is what I find the biggest problem. This is where most of our problems come from, with whatever, how the military is being handled, how the governments are built, how we handle the economy, how we handle capitalism, socialism, communism, how all of these, how we handled Bible. This is so embarrassing. If you would tell it to any alien, how could you not have a red face? Or he would be saying, like, this is such a good book, this is such a good political system, this is such a good economical system, how could you... F this up, you know? Mm-hmm. How is that possible? And we'd be like, yeah, because we sit at home, it hurts in the heart, and so we go out and we do damage. And this is what I find is the biggest problem at the moment. And I think music in this case is not so much, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily, it is definitely helps, but I don't think it's what its aim or its purpose. Music is, in the end, is something that suddenly in our lives help us to get in touch with this little ball inside, with whichever color it is. And we suddenly have a magnifying glass, or it could be a kaleidoscope, or it could be just some kind of channel through which we suddenly be in touch with this thing that belongs to us like nothing else can belong to us. It's the most our thing in our lives. And we suddenly feel like we can touch it, or at least reach to it. And this is why I think it's more like a parallel going magnifying glass to humanity, rather than something that helps or saves it. Maybe not saves it, but yeah, I guess it helps and saves it, but it's not its purpose. It's there because we just need some kind of channel to reach our stomach and heart, and I think if we put it in very practical way to answer your question, the way to put it in is to make it mandatory for any kind type of education. It should be in every single person's life as a tool. It's just a tool that every person needs to have available to them. Whether they use it or not is another thing. But this is how I think it could help and should help.
Mm-hmm. So music lessons don't have to be... Yeah, let's have a round of applause.
Bravo.
Yeah, it's very, very beautiful. But one question to it. the music lessons, or to put it higher in education and in the priority in society, is it about having more people making music themselves, or is it, in quotation marks, enough to listen to music actively and get calm and get this connection? Is there a difference?
I think it's more about like what I said about the music shop. It should be there. Mm-hmm. All kids are sensitive to sound. Actually, interesting fact, I found out that when we're born, there are only two things that we fear of as a newborn child. From falling, if we feel like we fall, uh-huh, we're going to be scared. And the sound, if there's a loud sound, we'll react. But otherwise, there's no fear. That means we react to sound much more than anything else. And every child is curious about sound. So I think if a child is surrounded by things that make sound and they're allowed to play with them and touch them and somehow experiment with them, they might not necessarily need musical education. There are so many geniuses who it's not that necessary. I think just necessity is just to surround them with possibilities to create a sound and allow them to do so. And then if they're curious themselves, they will come to you and they will say to you, I need to produce this more. And I've been working a lot with kids since I'm a teenager. I've been teaching people all ages. And I always see when they're allowed, they see the power of it, because it's so beautiful to play with this little ball inside of yourself. And they would absolutely come and say, I need more education, so give it to me. I don't think it's something should be forced. They should just be surrounded by some, you know, music, playing, not playing, live music, live sounds, natural sounds, and sound making stuff that they're allowed to touch and play and break and fix.
Is there something, I want to ask you first, Andy, is there something music can do, other forms of art can't do in this way? So could it also be drawing?
I think so, yeah. I think it's all about like really feeling some truth in it in a way, intense way, you know? And I guess you could find that in any art, I think, you know? If you read a book that you can deeply connect with, for example, and you feel like you are in the, you know, in the head of the author who is going through a certain situation, and you can, resonate with that strongly, I think it does exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's more about this feeling that you have when you are in contact with music or art or literature. Yeah, I think any art can do that, mm-hmm, to give a short answer, yeah.
And what do you think is the thing which is stopping people from getting this connection through art? Because you said, Sabine, that it's a problem that many people don't get a connection to this little ball inside. I ask you too, what is stopping people?
I think we are very overwhelmed at the current situation with a lot of things, like technology moved on so fast, for example, in the last maybe 10, 20 years, that I think a lot of people feel very disconnected to themselves, because, I mean, so much distraction out there, you know. And that can be, very concrete technical developments, like the internet, like the devices we use and how we use them. I think you can disconnect people from themselves very strongly. So I think that's what's happening in that sense, yeah. And a way to find back, for example, would be to like a moment of silence, for example, or just, you know, be without your phone for a day, for example. Mm-hmm. That's considered a luxury now. Like the who are the people you know who don't use smartphones? You know, like there's really very few people who do that, and they do it very actively and consciously, because they know what it does to us, and they want to, I think, you know, have clear thoughts, don't be too distracted by it, and feel connected to themselves. So I think that plays a big role about like how the world is going crazy at the moment, you know. Mm-hmm. We are bombarded with information. And the relation of facts, information, and truth is also very strange at the moment, right? So, for example, algorithms are there to trigger some emotions in us, right? And they are just there to create emotions, to make us use certain devices or products more. So in that picture, that's basically disconnecting people from their natural feeling about themselves, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I would add, I agree to it, of course. Everything you say is just, you know, it's clear right there. One cannot not agree with this. I would add to it that I think the reason why this is happening so easily is that by nature, most of us are kind of have this necessity of following somebody's lead. You know, we are this kind of species, I guess, when we lived for a long time like that. We live in groups and we need a leader who tells us what to do, because we are a bit of, like, we are mostly afraid of taking the responsibility of our own decisions. I'm going to go start a company and I believe in this, but I'm very scared to do it. So I will just sit at home and I will just go and get a job at somebody else's
mm-hmm.
company. And most of us have this fear. And I think the current situation, current powerful entities or people absolutely understand that we are completely panicking constantly, people, humans, and they take a little bit of advantage of this. They tell us what to do, and it's much more calming and relaxing for us when somebody else makes the decision and we follow it, rather than sit down and make our own. So this is why we're told, you know, to go to the school and then to get a job and then to get married and to have babies at a certain age. There's always an expectation, and trust and or try not doing that. You immediately feel excluded or judged, or and you don't want to have that. And there are people who resist that, but they're by nature very strong, or something happened or whatever. They're just at the moment still, unfortunately, exceptions. But I think we all have that inside of us. And this is why, you know, it's just feels like mostly a shame that so much is going to waste. But I think that's why the reason is what's happening. Why there's a wall between something, or why are we not reaching out to our insides more, is because it's scary. And it's much easier when somebody else tells you mm-hmm. what you should like, what you should buy, what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
And we surrender to it. And if we don't like it, then we go somewhere else where somebody else tells us what we should mm-hmm. do, but he's doing a better job maybe. But God forbid, it is scary to tell yourself what to do and to get up and do it. It's lots of discipline and lots of hard work and lots of disappointment. It's hard.
It's scary.
It also is scary.
You can fail and
of
you're
course.
Scared of failing. And yeah.
And you try, and sometimes you get so traumatized that you don't want to try it anymore.
Yeah.
So the people, we all know a person who succeeded in that, and we know always look at that and say like, yeah, I could have done this much, but that much I could not have done probably. There are usually exceptions, but they exist. And we see that they have some kind of drive that is not very common among everyday an average person, but I think that's coming, because it's some certain awakening is coming also through technological age, which I guess is the advantage of having access to much more information and being much more connected to people that we would have never otherwise been connected.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just talking to somebody in Lapland who is telling me about some hiking trails. Like, how could I have had this information of an insider who is from there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And telling me about this wondrous, miraculous thing happening, such as the Northern Lights, such a beautiful thing. So it makes my life somehow better. So we do have some awakening coming up where we say, you know what? I'm not going to sit at home. I'm going to go and watch the Northern Lights because it's possible, and I'm allowed, and I'm a human, and I might not be able to afford it, or it might be scary, but I could do it. And a lot of things are happening. So lots of different food consumption waves, or sports, or reading, or, you know, people read a lot, listen to lots of classical music, do lots of healthy things. We just, you know, making fun of the people who do yoga is one thing. But on the other hand, it makes them unhealthy. It's good. It's a great thing.
It is.
So
I'm not even making fun of that.
I'm actually one of them, so making not fun, but it itself. And so I think we have probably much more chance to open and allow music and art to come in and to touch and caress our painful three heads than before.
One question relating to how you started. We were talking about how scary it is to take own decisions, and I agree. Would you agree that improvisation and creating art is a good training for releasing that fear and come into doing?
Yeah, definitely.
Perfect
question. Yeah, it is. Short answer is yes. And that's, of course, because you always have to take a risk, and it's always about the possibilities to fail when you really improvise. I mean, a lot of improvised music that has this label improvised music on it is not actually improvised. It is using certain structures and, you know, playing something that you practiced in a certain way, for example, you know, but really improvising and being in the moment and daring steps that you haven't done before, that is exactly what we're talking about in that context. So that is the perfect training, yeah, because you risk something and you might just, if you have a great moment, then it might just work out beautifully and you might enter spaces that you haven't before. And, you know, if it doesn't, it can fail. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think if it fails, it doesn't destroy. It just doesn't give anything to it, but it doesn't take anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's well what said. You can learn from failing, I guess, is that it's not a big deal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You try it in a different way next time. That's it. Yeah. So it's perfect training. Yeah, definitely.
Marked.
Anything to add to this?
No, I'm very happy for this question. It's just once again, I guess, is an affirmation to my next plan where I'm going to be exploring that about myself, which I'm very looking forward to after what you said.
Nice.
There was one quote I heard by Luisa Neubauer, who made Fridays for Future big in Germany. And she was asked why she did this, why she took this effort. And then she again quoted the question she asked herself. So if you look back on your life, when you're an old person, when you know it's going to end, how do you want to have used or dealt with your responsibilities and your possibilities?
So we're asking ourselves when we're dying, how we would have used.
So you just imagine the person looking, so you yourself looking back on your life and asking, did I deal right with my possibilities and responsibilities?
I have no idea how to answer that.
I somehow think maybe the question carries some value to it, but I don't think it's the right way to think about it, because it is double hypothetical, which is it's just senseless. Sounds to me
there's a more easy way to ask it, and that's who do you want to have been. It's still hypothetical, but a bit simpler.
I personally find it irrelevant to anything.
That's a lot.
I think it's. I find this question an irrelevant question to any worth.
Mm-hmm.
That's my answer.
Do you have a better question in this direction?
But wait, let's see. Andy, maybe we'll have say.
Yeah, maybe we can keep this.
Yeah, I'm also not sure about this. Like I said, I don't know how to answer this. But I think, like, of course, we all want to make good use of our situation, and I think we're lucky the way we were born into this world. I mean, compared to a lot of other people, so the situation we were born in is quite it's a wealthy situation, you know. It's I never had war in my life, for example, and stuff like this. So if you see a lot of people from other places in the world, I think we can consider ourselves very lucky in that sense. And but I don't really know how to answer how we would reflect on our lives when we're old and if we made the right choices.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just a matter of doing it, and I guess you can feel while doing it if it's the right way to go or not. At some point, if you have a lot of wrong choices that you did, you will feel very disconnected. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's my approach to it.
So it's an improvised approach.
Yeah, it's like go and do it. And at some point you feel if you constantly made the wrong choices, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that everyone, I think, asks themselves. And then you have to be honest enough to answer
mm-hmm.
in an honest way. Yeah.
I think if we could, we would. So whatever we're doing is exactly what we should be doing.
So you think like destiny and stuff like that?
It's not that I think, and I wouldn't use the word destiny, but I have come to think and to feel and to see by literally like tested mathematics almost, where, you know, you sit at home and you know you're supposed to be practicing, but instead you're on TV and watching just nothing, not doing anything. It's not just as simple as, oh, I should just get up and practice and I'm making the bad decision and I'm going to be thinking about this later because I spent 45 years doing that. In the deathbed, I will think, oh, I should have watched less Grey's Anatomy or whatever it is.
I think wasting time is a great thing to do as well.
But that's what I wanted to say, is that there is a reason why you sit and watch Grey's Anatomy and there is a reason why your neighbor is sitting and practicing. It's not as simple as, oh, I should have just moved my ass. It doesn't work like this.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain motivations for different things and we are filled with so much information and it's once again, it's all in the stomach or in the heart or in this little ball. It's all there. So if you are uncomfortable and you think that you should be somebody else, then you will be someone else. It's the end of this is basically the default about yourself is always movement. You always move. You're never standing. So if you every day choose to watch TV over doing something else, there must be a reason or a motivation. And if you feel uncomfortable about it, then you will change it. It's the end of story. There cannot be that you're uncomfortable for 45 years watching TV and not having practice. It's not going to happen. It will only happen if you're comfortable with this. And if you're comfortable watching TV for 45 years, then good for you. You must have had a great life, and when you're dying, you're not going to regret it. So I think this is why I don't find the sense in the question, because I think it is supporting the whole understanding of we should be doing something else, mm-hmm. which I don't believe in, and I have seen life has proven to me the opposite all the time,
mm-hmm.
and this is why I don't find the question sensible, mm-hmm. something.
Yeah, but what I like about the question is that it is capable of opening inspiration and maybe some wishes about where to look next. For example, if the answer would be, I want to have been improvising music in my life. It can give you motivation in this moment to go towards improvising. So it's kind of a workaround which can open different ways of thinking.
Okay, so yeah. For you it's more like you imagine yourself in that situation and then making a step maybe that you wouldn't have done if you
maybe
didn't think about this like that. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's possible, but maybe not at the same time, because I also believe, so I want to add one perspective to what you said, what matches very good, I think. I think even if you made a mistake in one moment, you mostly or you always did the best you could according to the possibilities and the experience you have. So this mistake had to happen. If you take everything which is around, all the possibilities, all the surrounding, it was just this mistake had to happen. And so it's good to learn from it, but it doesn't make sense to think back how it could have been possible to avoid it. Is that a similar direction to what you think?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
And actually, on this note, I would like to ask you a question,
yes,
if
please.
I may. So you are a person who is also pretty much living... First of all, your living situation is very different than majority of people.
Mm-hmm.
You're very mobile with your living. And also, you are currently working on a project already dedicated to it for a couple of months that is bringing people together so something can come out of it, which is also very nice. And it's definitely reaching out towards this, you know, ball where lots of things are happening inside. Now, from your perspective, what is it that you think that could be changed? Or have you already encountered somebody who really managed to, or are you a person like that yourself who wants to have this change happening or contribute to this kind of change to make this more kind of better or tolerable, or the change that you were talking about, how music can change the world for the better? Do you see it already happening? Is this your intention to do, or have you already seen this at work through your travels and your projects?
Mm-hmm. So one thing I found out about the power of music that I didn't learn by learning my instrument at the university was the power to get a very honest connection quite fast to many different people. So maybe that's the strongest thing that I experienced and that I decided to use myself with the music. So for example, I was traveling, coming to a city, and I didn't know how to connect. I didn't know how to even start a conversation. Because at one moment after 3 days not talking to somebody, it's hard to make the start because you are afraid of failing. And this fear gets very strong. And then there was the chance to play some music. So there was a session. And I still was very uncomfortable because I don't feel like I'm very good in improvisation. But I decided, okay, I have to do it. And so I was standing on the stage and playing a blues, and it was kind of okay. And afterwards, there were the whole band and many people from the audience were very open to get into exchange about what we think, about our wishes and whatever. So it's a very strong shortcut. And I'm a person who wants to collect many different bits and pieces, like we did yesterday, I think, because I think they always connect to something. And yeah, that's the way how I do it with this project. So music is like a tool. The music is my instrument.
You actually asked us this question, but you didn't answer it yourself. Did you already have a picture, a sound picture of where the piece is going that we did together as we were collecting all these sounds?
There was some mood. So you are talking about the music now,
yes,
concretely.
Yes, now I just kind of, because you were also talking about, you know, how you connect with the people and what you like doing and collecting. And I just wanted to quickly take back that and bring that and see what your answer is to this question, because you also produced something within a very short time.
Yeah.
It's very listenable, almost danceable even. So did you kind of, in this case or in general, when you do these projects, when we walk around town or if we would have been sitting in a room, do you already have a direction set where it's going, or is it really like how does that come together in your head? Now, as you said, you like really collecting the things.
Yeah. So one thing I'm learning by doing it like this is that there's always a bigger picture where everything comes together. So it's building the trust that is there. So I didn't know a lot about how it would fit together. I had some feelings about what could fit together. For example, the sounds from the streets of Vienna going into the monochord sound. So there's some connections already now, like a puzzle game. And you know, okay, those parts fit together, mm-hmm. and those. But the rest of it is trust. Trust in improvisation and in... I also don't want to use the word destiny, but Yeah, so it will connect somehow. Maybe because it's from the same space, or it's because it's from the same bigger picture, yeah. And it's interconnected anyways.
All right.
Okay, so Sabine has to call the dude.
Yeah. Anyway, I want to say thanks for having us be part of this whole thing.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was absolutely a great memory to remember when we're going to die.
Yeah, thank you very much from my side for the trust and to take the risk to go in. And yeah, I'm happy to keep in touch maybe and see where our journey is going.
And wishing you all the best encounters on your future travels. And we'll definitely be following whatever is going to be doing in the next places.
Thanks, same to you.
I really hope you liked the interview and got inspired by it. If you want to follow the journey to get all the stories and music, please follow on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and have a look on getnext.to/intubawild. That's my blog. In 1 week, I will release the Song of Vienna, which I created together with Sabina and Andy. I will tell something about how we made it, how we got inspired, and where and how we found the sounds and the piano. I would be really happy if you follow or subscribe to the podcast to help me to reach more and more people with the work I do together with musicians from all over Europe. Thanks a lot, have a great week, and please tell your family, your friends and colleagues about the project. Ciao!